And here's a picture. Esther and I and a very dear friend.
Mm-hmm.
And our kid.
My husband's.
I had started it.
National section. National Council. Excuse me. Pittsburgh section, National Council of Jewish Women. Eleanor Langer and Natalie Mandelblatt interviewing Miss Rose Hartz for the third hour, January 28, 1976. Miss Hartz, would you like to tell us about the work you did with Kaufman's on their fashion shows?
All right. Mr. I.D. Wolf headed the United Jewish Campaign, one of his extracurricular activities, and instead of having cut-and-dried speeches, he said that he would like to have a show, to have an entertainment, and which I did, and it was not unrelated to the United Jewish Appeal or whatever it was called, but it had a connection with the activities of the United Jewish Appeal, but it was done in an entertaining fashion. And at that time, he said, as a result of that experience, he said, I'm going to get you to do the fashion shows in the store. So I did. And this first one was called Take a Tip. And it was written by Charles Gaynor, who was very talented and did musical reviews for the Pittsburgh Playhouse in earlier years. And he wrote it. And then it says here on the program, entire production devised and directed by Rose Hartz. The major people in the show were Polly Rolls and a young man, Bill Ives, who went to Carnegie Tech Drama School and later went into the movies, but unfortunately he passed away as quite a young man. Mm-hmm. Nancy Steigerwald was another. Now, the chorus girls were really adorable. They came from Carnegie Tech, from PCW then, and they were all very nice looking and very... very nice to work with. Then what it did was that the opening scene was Pennsylvania Station, Pittsburgh, and she was off to the leading lady to get some kind of an award, I believe, in Hollywood. I'm not sure. Anyway, what was described in the program then, then the models were worked in because these were people who went to see her off. And then the clothes that they wore was described, and not in a conventional way by a fashion coordinator, but a member of the cast. And so it was not sort of thrown at you that these are the clothes and this is the floor on which you can find this, you know, these things. But so this was all, their clothes was described in the program, and also the price was given of the clothes. But it was done not in the conventional fashion show order. It was all in a framework of entertainment. And so these were people who were going to see young men and young girls who were going to see Polly off, who had gotten a trip to California, to Hollywood. And that was that kind of wear, daytime wear. And then the whole thing was divided into scenes, and the first scene was Pennsylvania Station, and the next she's headed for Hollywood, and the stop is at Grand Canyon at the El Tovar Hotel. And then it was Easter Sunday afternoon, so it was Easter close. And then the executive offices of Progressive Pictures, where she was to get the job, and more clothes, and incidentally, her romance, and there was music like, or numbers when a lady falls in love, that was that was sung by Polly, and there was dancing, of course, and then this Starter Walk girl did a scene, "It Takes a Hat to Get Your Man," and so this is introducing the hats. And then there was the dance. And then I think the last scene was at Ciro's, and that gave the opportunity for evening clothes. So the audience was made that up of customers who came to be entertained. They had dinner at Kaufman's, and then they went in to see the show. So that was all. The price was in one. And then at the bottom, at the end of the program, it lists the different, for instance, it would say that Van Ralty hosiery and where you could get it on this floor, and the girls' daytime dresses on which floor, and so on. Now, a syndicated feature writer by the name of Barlow, I forget his first name, but I don't know how he appeared on the scene, but he said, he wrote it up, and he said it made fashion show history, because it had fashion show had been done just in this way. And I did two of these fashion shows, and one in the spring and one in the fall. And then when I wanted more money, why, Mr. Wolf said, no, that he wasn't going to come across, and I said, well, let me finish my identification with the store. But then it was later, the fashion shows came first, and then later that I was called in to do the Quiz Kit program, which I already talked about.
You told me over the phone, but it hasn't been put on the tape yet.
Well, in the advertising and promotional department, Marjorie Rich was a former student of mine, and she now has her own advertising business in New York. But that Marjorie was at the head of promotions, and when there was this program called the Quiz Kids. I don't know whether either of you would remember a program like that.
No, very much so. Mm-hmm.
And so they were coming to Pittsburgh, that Kaufman's was bringing the Quiz Kids to Pittsburgh in a $5 million war bond show. And Mr. Wolf asked me to do that. And so it was the whole promotion, which was a very extensive program, is on file at Kaufman's today. It was like writing a master's thesis, really, in preparation for that, but they wanted that complete report on the whole process. And the process began with trying to find the Pittsburgh Quiz Kid who would go on national hookup with the four regulars. And the young man, so there was a series of programs in the store trying to find the Pittsburgh Quiz Kid. And the young man, he was from Peabody. Now, we also had judges, and the judges were selected from or offered their services. I think, I don't know whether there was any remuneration for their service. I know that I would take the judges to lunch, and then after that they would judge. There were always four, I believe, four or five Pittsburgh quiz kids, actually, and the one that came out first. Well, through this process of elimination, trying to find the Pittsburgh quiz kid, was a young man from Peabody. And then the final show was the final week. The quiz kids came to Pittsburgh, and I had to arrange for where they would stay and to see that they had flowers in the room and fruit and all that kind of thing. Now, my brother was wonderful, a great big help, because they wanted to go to a steel mill, and they wanted to go up the incline, and we had sort of talked about the places that would be of interest, and at that time, you couldn't get into a steel mill, but they, I think it was Carnegie, Illinois, invited us for lunch, and also permitted us to go through. So they were here for a whole week. And then Sunday night, in order to see the show, you had to buy a bond, a war bond. And I remember then all the kids that had participated trying out, they were seated on the stage. But the young man who had won out and was to appear with the regular quiz kids, he was, of course, in the group with them. And there were only four or five of them. And he did very well. Now, Edgar Kaufman was living at the time, and he was so helpful to me, because anybody who, I mean, those who had participated in the process of elimination, all these children, they were seated on the stage, and he helped to get these kids seated, and it was quite a job. Then the gavel that Sam Rayburn had used when war was declared was auctioned off that night, and for $50,000, Kaufman's bought it and presented it then to the Carnegie Museum. That's where it is today. And then there were other items that were auctioned off in order to make money. And so that was quite an undertaking. And at the end of the whole promotion, then I had to submit to them the whole story of the promotion, and step by step, and all the details, and that's on file in Kaufman's today.
Did you have anything to do with devising the kinds of questions that were asked in choosing the Pittsburgh quiz kids?
Well, we had, no, I don't think so, no, because I don't know whether the national group gave us questions, and the different professors from Carnegie Tech, University of Pittsburgh, and Duquesne, these were the judges who asked the questions. Now, I know we had nothing to do with that, because they evidently the national must have sent in a series of questions that were asked. So thank goodness I had nothing to do with that.
You were doing this a lot just as a side project while you were teaching.
What happened was that I worked a few months before the actual show. But Mr. Wolf had contacted the Board of Education and asked for permission that I could take a leave of a month or so, to as the thing kept, accelerating in activity. So he did that. I mean, it was impossible for me to continue teaching and to handle that promotion because it was on such a big scale.
How much money was raised for?
Well, I don't remember how much money was raised. In order to get in, you had to buy a bond. But I don't remember that. Now, that would all be in the report. I worked on that. It was like I was writing a master's thesis. But I had to do that because that's the store wanted it. And so that's what I had to do. And it was infinitely detailed. One of the most detailed things that I ever had to do, I think.
Was your fashion show ever used for entertainment for the UJA?
No. It was for the store. That's it. It was for the store. And, I guess I did mention about a newspaper man, Mr. Barlow. Yes. Yeah, I did tell you that. Well, that, and I did, as I said, I think I said that I did two or three, I'm not sure. And then when I asked for more money, Mr. Wolf wasn't coming across, so I said, well, then that's it. I had had enough of it anyway. And after all, I did have primarily, I mean, my first consideration and interest was in the teaching. And this was all, something that was in addition, and I felt that my job was, that came first.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned to me over the phone that you also were involved in some dramatic projects for Council of Jewish Women.
Well, now that came even prior to all this. Do you know Dorothy Blumenthal, of course, and do you know Gertrude Labowitz? They're good friends. Well, her name was Gertrude Green, and she was very active in the council. And I don't know how I got involved in it, but I did what was known as the Council Gaieties. And that was a review, and the girls were just adorable. They were darling, and I did that show. She did the costuming. She was in charge of that. And I guess she was the overall chairman. And for that, I got, a few dozen American Beauty roses. That was my compensation.
Did you write and direct this?
I wrote some of it. Now, perhaps there were others that helped with the writing, but I did some of it.
When was this?
Well, that was long before I did anything for Kaufman's. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember the date. You remember the date? That's about Council Gaieties. I don't remember that.
Dates don't get me on. But I can't find that write-up when my grandmother passed away. My mother, that's my mother's mother. But here's her picture. That'll give you an idea what time this is. Now, her name was Fruma, F-R-U-M-A. And her husband was Isaac Byrne.
Okay.
Both of them were instrumental in starting the Hebrew Free Loan Association in Baltimore and the burial. And she always had a big black pocketbook attached to her skirt, and people would give her money. They trusted her with all amounts of money because she befriended the poor, and unbeknownst to anybody, no names mentioned, she would take care of them.
And your father's parents' names?
My father's parents, the mother is Etta Hartz, mm-hmm. and Leba Hearts.
How would you spell?
L-E-B-A. but both my mother and my mother's mother and the father were very active in the
Baltimore community.
Mm-hmm. I wish I could find that write-up. I had it not so long ago. But I'll come across it.
Do you know when your parents were married?
Well, there's one of their wedding presents there.
Mm-hmm.
Was 18,
maybe 1890.
Okay. 1890. I have your birthday.
Yes, you have mine.
All right. Do you know approximately what year Jeanette was born? Or?
Yeah, Jeanette. Let's go back. We got my brother Ben there.
Yes, I don't have any birthday.
That's January 25th. 1898. Mm-hmm. Okay. Still would be about 1896. 1896, yeah. Jen was 1894, June the 3rd.
Okay.
Now you got Mick?
Not a birthday.
Milton Hart?
Yeah.
August 15th, 1904.
Okay.
And I was 1902, May 28th.
1902.
That's it.
Okay. And Jeanette died in
August 1st,
1975.
Mick died in 73, June the 9th.
Okay.
And Ben died in was that four? Ben died in 45.
Yes.
In 45. Yes.
Okay. And
November, I think, 24th.
Right, that's. Is Seal still living?
Yes.
Okay.
She just celebrated her.
That's what I thought. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
That takes. Mm-hmm.
Anything else you need before I go up? I'm working on income.
I don't think.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Ed.
Oh.
Now, I have here. Unless you want me to begin at any particular place.
No, go right ahead.
Now, I think this is about all with the extracurricular activities, and mainly with Kaufman's department store. When Jeanette, Esther, and I went to Europe and Israel, and it was the first sabbatical leave that was given in the city, and that was 1955. It was right before the Sinai War in Israel. Well, we went to, this trip was very carefully planned, our trip began in Ireland, and then to England. Now, I don't think I talked about this before, but I'm going to mention one incident. Esther was office manager of Ben Swanger, Hest, and Herzog. Did I tell you?
I don't know if we have it on the tape.
Yeah, I think, yes, it's on the tape. All right. Well, then after we returned, one of the teachers at Alderdice, Miss Gorman, said, I put you down for a program for the National Association of University Women to tell about your trip. And I was furious because I didn't want to do it. And she wanted me to talk about the experience, particularly in Israel. So I wrote this paper. It's called A Miracle of Redemption. And this was quite a thing that I worked on. And, of course, I don't see any point in saying anything more about it. The conclusion of it was that as our own blessed land has always been a light to the peoples of the world, so may Israel be a light to the nations of the Middle East. May peace dwell within these borders, so that every man, shall sit under his vine and under his fig tree, and none shall make them afraid. That was the conclusion of this talk. Now, I think this may be doing it backwards, but when we came back, I may have mentioned that from the trip, that long trip, that first trip, then I was told that I was to teach a speech class, and I talked about that. Yes. Now, I also want to mention, I don't think I did, but at the end of each semester, it was only a semester's course, that there was always a speech luncheon. Did I mention that?
Yeah.
All right. Now, your mother, Eleanor, attended almost every one of these luncheons. There were a few. And there was a program. And Taylor ordered a speech luncheon. And there was the invocation. And then there was the toastmaster and the introduction of the guests. And then the program was the proper study of mankind as man. And then the following gave talks on the things that they had to, it was kind of satirizing some of the things that they had done in speech class. Relaxation, there were always a few exercises to relax the person. Animation was another. And then we each one had a mirror so he could see formation, the organs of articulation, the lips, the teeth, the tongue, and so on, so that they could see what was going on. And so one girl gave a talk about the mirror. And then one spoke about diction, another about visual aids. And this was all satiric, the first front and the first mid-vowel, and the patient and the doctor. And then Jamie Gruber talked about empathy, and this is satirizing. And then the super evaluator, because they had to evaluate each other. And so this was a program. And then members of the board were also invited, and so your mother attended.
Where were these luncheons held?
Well, they were not held in school. They were held outside of school, and I just don't remember where that one was held.
Did the idea for these luncheons initiate with you or with the class?
Well, I guess it was a combination of both. That it was, they had worked hard, and they deserved to be entertained, and they had, you know, enjoyed what they were doing to some extent. And so it was satirizing themselves, I guess, in this in the program. And then members of the board were invited to come. The principal was always there.
The students didn't have their parents?
No, it was kind of limited. They could have come if they wanted to, but I didn't think perhaps they would be interested. Now, I think I told you about Camp Awani and what I did there. I was to do the plays. And one of the things that Mrs. Strakosch, the director, wanted was she wanted a pageant that would deal with the history of that particular area, the Green Mountain Boys and all that. So I did that, and it tells the story inside here, and this is the cast and the episodes. And then it was called The Pageant of Youth. And it was, I remember going into the library in Rutland, Vermont, and trying to get material about the history of that particular area. And I always remember one scene. A counselor who was my assistant, and we became very good friends. She was a New Yorker, and she was one of the Green Mountain Boys in this pageant.
How do you spell Strakosch?
S-T-R-A K-O-S-C-H. And she is, will always remain an unforgettable person in my experience of Camp Awani. We remained friends after that.
You had mentioned in connection with her a woman who would have started her in the camp.
Oh, well, I think it was Mrs. Rebecca Kohut.
And how would you